Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We encounter surfaces everywhere in our lives, but have you ever stopped to consider how they form, like at a microscopic level?
It's not something that usually keeps me up at night, but it is pretty fascinating when you start to think about it.
Right, like how frost spreads across a window pane or how a thin film builds up on a surface. What shapes that kind of bumpy, rough texture that
Well,
emerges?
today we're going to try to do just that.
Yeah, we're going to dive deep, no pun intended, into the world of surface growth and roughness, guided by a seminal paper from 1991.
Kinetic Roughening of Growing Surfaces by Joachim Krug and Herbert Spohn.
This paper was it was hugely influential in shaping our understanding of these processes.
Absolutely. And the goal here is, well, we want to give you a good feel for the fundamental concepts, the models that scientists use to describe how surfaces, evolve during growth.
Yeah. We'll try to hit those aha moments, those moments of clarity where the science clicks. And we'll try to do it without, overwhelming you with too much technical jargon.
That's the plan. So where should we start?
Well, I think it makes sense to start with the big picture, literally. So, like what determines the overall shape of something as it grows?
Okay, great point. So the paper emphasizes that it's all about the direction in which the growth is fastest. That will end up dictating the final macroscopic form.
Right. So like if we imagine a blob of something, if it expands more rapidly in some directions than others, those faster growing parts will kind of dominate and define its final shape, right?
Precisely. Like, imagine you're baking cookies, and some spread out way more than others. The overall shape on the cookie sheet will be determined by the ones that spread the most.
Okay, that's a delicious analogy. Now the paper brings up this notation or xtsht. Can you explain what that represents?
Sure. It's basically a way to keep track of the height of the growing cluster or surface. The h is for height. It's a function of position x on a flat surface. That surface could be one-dimensional, two-dimensional, or even higher. And of course, it changes over time, t.
So it's like a snapshot of how tall the growing thing is at every point on the surface at a given time.
Right. And to understand the overall shape, we often smooth over those tiny little bumps on the surface and just focus on the average heights. When we do that, the local speed at which the surface grows, what we call v, the growth velocity, it depends on the gradient of the surface at that point.
Okay, so the gradient is basically telling us how steep the surface is at that spot, right?
Exactly.
So a really steep part might grow faster or slower than a gentler slope.
You got it. And the paper gives this nice example of something called an isotropic system. Think of something like a water droplet forming, where it grows outward equally in all directions.
Perfect sphere.
Right. In these isotropic cases, the growth velocity v, it's related to the square root of 1 plus the square of the gradient magnitude, which we usually denote as u. But in the real world, of course, things aren't always so perfectly uniform.
Yeah, things are messy.
Exactly. Like, think about crystal growth. The arrangement of atoms in a crystal means that some directions are naturally easier for growth than others. So the relationship between the growth velocity v and the gradient u can become much more complicated. That's what we call anisotropic growth.
So the underlying structure of the material dictates the preferred directions of growth.
Exactly.
Okay, now this is where things start to get really interesting. The paper mentions that if you start with just a tiny seed of something growing, its shape at any later time, t, can be described by this scaling form, hx equals tgxt. Can you unpack that a bit for us?
Absolutely. What this is telling us is that as time goes on, if you zoom out proportionally, the shape of the growing surface actually stays the same.
Whoa, hold on. So it's saying that the shape expands in size, but its fundamental form doesn't change over time.
That's right. The underlying blueprint for the roughness is kind of baked in right from the start. The shape might get bigger, but the relative proportions remain the same.
That's like those fractal images where you can zoom in forever and see the same patterns repeating.
Yeah, exactly. It's a self-similar structure.
So how does the growth velocity we talked about earlier, how does that relate to this stable expanding shape?
Well, the paper delves into the mathematical link between these two, and it involves something called the Legendre transform.
Oh, that sounds fancy.
It is a bit mathematical, but basically it's a tool that allows us to shift our perspective. Instead of describing how the surface grows based on its local slope, it lets us predict the final shape by looking at the range of growth speeds present.
So it's like flipping the script.
Yeah, exactly. We're going from growth rules to final form, and the Legendre transform is the translator that helps us do that.
Okay, so the Legendre transform connects the growth velocity to the final shape. Now, the paper also talks about these things called edges, facets, and singularities.
Right. You can think of these as like the quirks and imperfections in the growing shape.
So not a perfectly smooth, continuous surface, but one with sharp features and maybe flat regions.
Exactly. So singularities in the growth velocity, meaning, you know, sudden jumps or non-smooth parts in how the growth speed depends on the slope, those translate into what we call non-analyticities in the growth shape. It's like a break in the smoothness of the surface.
I see. So for instance, if the growth velocity has like a linear section over a certain range of slopes, what happens to the shape?
You end up with a flat facet on the growing shape.
Okay, like a cut diamond having those flat, shiny faces.
Exactly. That arises because of specific growth rates in those particular directions. And there's more. If the growth velocity has what we call a cusp at zero gradient, meaning it comes to a sharp point like VO behaves as, say, the absolute value of raised to some power greater than one, you end up with a singular point in the shape.
So a sharp change in the growth rule can lead to a sharp feature in the shape.
Exactly. And if that power I is greater than or equal to one, a flat facet will develop.
Yeah.
So even a sharp change in the growth rule at a flat part of the surface can still result in a macroscopic flat feature.
Okay, so there's this intricate dance between the microscopic rules of growth and the macroscopic shape that emerges. And now we come to the wolf construction. That sounds kind of intimidating.
Yeah, it has a kind of grand name, but the concept is really elegant. The wolf construction comes from the study of systems in equilibrium. Like think of a crystal just sitting there at a constant temperature.
Just chilling.
Right. And the wolf construction helps determine the shape that minimizes the total surface energy. It's basically nature finding the most stable, energy-efficient configuration for a given volume of material.
So it's like a way to figure out the ideal shape for minimizing surface tension.
Yeah, exactly.
But in our case, we're talking about growing surfaces, right? They're not usually in equilibrium.
True. But the paper points out that a similar idea applies to growth processes as well. Instead of minimizing surface-free energy, we relate the normal growth velocity, that's the speed at which the surface grows perpendicular to itself, denoted by what, where what is the angle with respect to some reference direction, we relate that to the final shape.
Okay, so different faces of a potential crystal might be growing at different speeds.
Right, and that will lead to a specific overall shape. And this wolf-like construction helps us figure out what that shape will be. It's all about finding the curve that minimizes a particular mathematical expression involving the growth velocity and the angle.
I think I'm starting to see the connection. It's like the faster growing parts kind of pull the shape outward in their direction. Okay, so that gives us a handle on the macroscopic shape. But now let's zoom in way in to the atomic level and talk about what the paper calls scaling theory of shape fluctuations. So now we're not just looking at the smooth average shape, but those tiny little bumps and wiggles on the surface.
Exactly. The focus here shifts to the statistical properties of these microscopic fluctuations, the roughness on the growing surface.
Okay. And one of the key ideas here is statistical scale invariance. What does that actually mean?
Imagine you take a picture of this rough surface, and then you zoom in, you look at a smaller portion of the surface under a microscope. If the surface exhibits statistical scale invariance, the essential character of the roughness, you know, the patterns of peaks and valleys, statistically speaking, they'll look the same at different magnifications. It's like looking at a fractal. The same fundamental structure repeats at different scales.
Ah, so it's like saying that the roughness has no inherent length scale. It looks kind of the same whether you're zoomed in or zoomed out.
Exactly.
And how do we actually measure or quantify this roughness in a statistical way?
The paper introduces this thing called the height difference correlation function.
Oh boy, here comes the math.
Don't worry, it's not as scary as it sounds. It's denoted by G, X, 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 T, where R is the separation between two points on the surface.
So like how far apart they are?
Right, and it basically tells you, on average, how much the height at one point differs from the height at another point a distance away, all at a specific time T. The angle brackets around it mean that we're taking an average over many different realizations of the growth process. Because remember, there's randomness involved.
So we're looking at the average difference in height between two points on the rough surface.
Exactly.
And this correlation function, it reveals the scale invariant nature of the roughness through these things called scaling exponents, right?
You got it. So the idea is that this correlation function, GRT, will scale in a particular way as you zoom in or out. Mathematically, it's expressed as b raised to the power of 2 times a function, frb, dv sub sub, where b is your scaling factor.
Okay, so we're zooming in or out by a factor of b. What about that b and that z?
Ah, those are the scaling exponents. Ag is the roughness exponent. It tells you how jagged or rough the surface is. The bigger r, the rougher the surface. And z is the dynamic exponent. It relates to how quickly the roughness evolves in time.
Okay, so s is like the jaggedness factor, and z is the speed of change factor.
That's a good way to put it.
Now, for really long times, like when the growth process has been going on for a while, the paper gives some simplified expressions for how GRT behaves. Can you tell us about those?
Sure. So if you look at distances r that are much smaller than a characteristic length scale called the lateral correlation length, denoted s sub sub t, the roughness behaves like r to the power of 2. But if you look at distances much larger than S sub C, the roughness scales like time t to the power of 2, where R is yet another exponent related to S and Z by the equation Bartsky.
Okay, so Bess's is like a combination of the spatial roughness and the speed of change. And what about that correlation length F sub sub? What's its role?
That correlation length that basically tells you the typical size of the bumps and valleys on the surface. It kind of sets the scale over which the surface looks rough. And as the growth process continues, this correlation length itself grows with time as s to the power of 1z. It's like the range over which the surface roughness is correlated is expanding over time.
So the bumps and valleys get bigger over time.
Exactly.
Now, the paper also mentions these things called corrections to scaling. What are those all about?
Yeah, that's an important point. In reality, things aren't always perfect power laws. Like, in actual experiments or even in computer simulations, you often see deviations from this ideal scaling behavior.
So those nice equations don't always perfectly match the messy real world.
Right. And there are a couple of reasons for that. First, there are finite size effects. Like your system isn't infinitely large, so at some point the size of the system itself will start to affect the roughness. And second, there might be other characteristic length scales present in the system that mess things up a bit.
So the simple scaling laws might break down if you zoom in too close or if the system is too small.
Right. And the paper mentions that there might even be a crossover length sub below which the scaling behavior is different.
Okay, so things can get a bit more complicated in practice. But going back to those exponents z and z, are they completely independent or is there some relationship between them?
That's a great question. And it turns out there is a fundamental scaling relation. Z equals 2. And the reason for this is actually pretty intuitive. Think about those bulges on the surface. They tend to grow outward at a rate that depends on their width. The wider the bulge, the faster it effectively grows in height relative to its width.
Okay, so wider bulges grow taller faster.
Exactly. And that geometrical constraint, it links the spatial and temporal aspects of the roughness. And that's what leads to this specific relationship between the exponents.
Got it. It makes sense that how rough it is in space would be connected to how quickly that roughness develops over time. Okay, let's move on to something a bit more concrete, shall we? The paper talks about different growth models. I imagine these are like simplified ways to simulate and understand these growth processes.
You got it. They're often computer-based models that aim to capture the essential rules of surface growth at a microscopic level. And the paper starts with these things called EDI models.
EDI models. Sounds peaceful.
They're actually quite simple, conceptually. Imagine a grid, and you start with a cluster of occupied cells on that grid. Now, you randomly add a new cell to any of the empty cells that are neighboring the existing cluster.
So it's like a blob that's growing outward by randomly attaching to its edges.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. And the cool thing is, even though the growth process is random, if you run the simulation for a long time with lots of particles, you end up with clusters that are pretty compact and roughly circular in shape.
So even randomness can lead to specific shapes.
Yeah, and the surface width WLLT, which is basically a measure of how much the height fluctuates for a cluster of size L at time T, it also shows this nice scaling behavior.
So the roughness is predictable even in a random process.
Exactly. For the 2D EDI model, simulation suggests that the surface width grows like L to the power of A, where L is around 12, and with time as t to the power of a, where L is about 13.
Okay, so even with all that randomness, there are these underlying scaling laws at play. What other growth models are there?
Well, next up are SOS models. SOS stands for solid on solid. And like EDI models, they're also based on a lattice. But in this case, they describe the height, h-i-t, at each site, I on the lattice over time.
So it's still a grid-based model.
Right. And a key feature of SOS models is that the height difference between neighboring sites is usually restricted. Like, it might be limited to, say, at most one unit.
So the surface can't have any really steep cliffs or overhangs.
Exactly. And the rules for how the height changes can include things like adding a particle to a site, deposition, or removing a particle, evaporation. And these rules can get pretty complicated depending on the model.
So SOS models add a bit more realism, taking into account things like surface tension and maybe even temperature.
Exactly. And they often display these nice scaling behaviors in their roughness. So they're great for studying how those factors influence the growing surface.
Okay, that makes sense. So EAN models are simple and random. SOS models add a bit more structure and realism. What's next?
Next, we have what are called ballistic deposition models. As the name suggests, it involves particles that are projected towards a surface.
Like a rain of tiny particles.
Yeah, kinda. But the key is that the particles follow either random trajectories or maybe a fixed angle. And when they hit the surface, they stick right there.
Okay, so unlike EAN models, where the growth happens only at the existing boundary, here, particles can land anywhere on the exposed surface.
Precisely. And this can lead to some really cool structures, especially when the particles come in at an angle. You often get these rough, porous surfaces with a characteristic columnar structure, like little pillars growing upward.
Oh, I can picture that. So the angle of the incoming particles really affects both the roughness and the overall shape.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we've got EAN, SOS, and ballistic deposition. Any others?
Yeah, one more interesting type. The paper mentions low temperaturizing dynamics.
Now that sounds like it's coming from a totally different area of physics.
It does. It's actually from the world of magnetism.
Huh, interesting.
Yeah. The idea is that you can study the growth of interfaces, which are essentially like surfaces, using models for magnetism like the Ising model at low temperatures. In these models, you have a lattice, and at each site, you have a spin that can point up or down like tiny little bar magnets.
Okay.
And at low temperatures, these spins like to align with their neighbors, so you end up with regions or domains of aligned spins. And the boundary between those domains, that's like a moving interface or surface. And the way these interfaces grow and fluctuate, driven by random spin flips, it can exhibit scaling behavior that's related to the surface growth we've been talking about.
So the movement of these magnetic domain boundaries is mathematically similar to the growth of, say, a crystal surface. That's a pretty neat connection.
Right. And it highlights how these ideas from statistical physics can apply to a wide range of phenomena.
That's one of the cool things about physics, finding these unexpected links between seemingly unrelated things.
Okay, we've covered a good chunk of growth models. What's next on the agenda? Well, now that we've seen these kind of discrete particle-based models, let's step up to what's called continuum theory.
So instead of dealing with individual particles on a grid, we're going to try to describe things with smooth, continuous equations.
That's the idea. And the paper introduces a very important equation in this context.
Mm.
The Kardar-Parisi-Zhang, or KPZ, equation.
The KPZ equation? I've heard that name thrown around a lot in physics. What makes it so special?
Well, for starters, it's named after three brilliant physicists. But more importantly, it's a relatively simple equation that manages to capture the essential physics of a lot of different non-equilibrium growth processes. It takes into account things like surface tension, which tends to smooth out the surface, the fact that growth can be faster on tilted surfaces, and the inherent randomness of the growth process at a microscopic level.
So it's like a universal equation that can describe a whole bunch of different growing surfaces.
Yeah, pretty much. Mathematically, it looks like this. 8 year plus I.
Ooh, now we're really getting into the math. Can you break that down for us a bit?
Sure. So, as before, is the height of the surface. The Tur term represents the smoothing effect of surface tension. The term is the nonlinear term that captures the fact that tilted surfaces might grow faster. And edxt is a random noise term, which represents those microscopic fluctuations.
So we've got smoothing, tilted growth, and randomness all baked into this one equation. What happens if we ignore that nonlinear term for a moment?
If you set d to u, you get what's called the linear theory. And in that case, the equation simplifies and essentially becomes a diffusion equation.
Diffusion, like how the smell of cookies spreads through the house?
Exactly. And the solution to that equation, it predicts a kind of diffusive broadening of the surface over time. The roughness exponent A in this linear theory is simply 2d2, and the dynamic exponent z is 2 for d dimensions. So in 1 plus 1 dimensions, meaning a one-dimensional surface growing in time, A is 12 and z is 2.
Okay, so that's the simplified version, but the full KPZ equation includes that nonlinear term. What difference does that make?
That nonlinear term, it's like the secret sauce of the KPZ equation. It fundamentally changes how the surface evolves.
In what way?
It introduces this coupling between the slope of the surface and its growth rate. Imagine a little bump on the surface. Because of that bump, the sides are tilted, right? Well, that nonlinear term causes those tilted parts to grow outward faster than the flatter regions.
And so the steeper the slope, the faster it grows.
Precisely. And that faster lateral growth then feeds back into the overall roughening of the surface. It's like a self-reinforcing loop. And because of this nonlinearity, the scaling exponents for the full KPZ equation are different from the linear case.
So the roughness behaves differently when that nonlinear term is in play.
Exactly. And in 1 plus 1 dimensions, the exact exponents for the KPZ equation are a 12 and z equals 32. This leads to a backup of 13. And this difference in the exponents highlights how important that nonlinearity is in capturing the true behavior of a lot of real-world growing surfaces.
So that seemingly small addition to the equation really changes the game. Now, the paper mentions some rather sophisticated mathematical techniques for analyzing the KPZ equation, things like weak coupling expansions and the functional renormalization group. I probably don't want to get into the weeds there, but can you give us a sense of what those methods are all about?
Yeah, they're definitely advanced tools. But the basic idea is to try to understand the long wavelength, long time behavior of the equation, because that's where the scaling behavior emerges. These techniques essentially allow you to systematically get rid of the short scale details that aren't so important for understanding the overall roughness, and then focus on the essential physics that governs how the surface evolves over large scales.
So it's like zooming out to see the forest for the trees.
Exactly.
And there's this really intriguing connection that the paper mentions between the KPZ equation and the problem of a directed polymer in a random medium. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Oh, yeah, that's a really cool connection. So imagine you have a string, like a polymer, and it's trying to find the shortest path through a medium that's full of random obstacles. It turns out that mathematically, this problem of finding the optimal path for the polymer, it's equivalent to the KPZ equation.
So a string navigating a random landscape is somehow related to a growing surface.
It's a really surprising duality, right? And it provides a whole new way to think about surface growth. You can picture those bumps and valleys on the surface as being analogous to the optimal path of a polymer threading its way through a random environment.
Okay, that's pretty mind-blowing. Are there any other equations out there that are kind of similar in spirit to the QCZ equation but describe different situations?
Yeah, the paper mentions some KPZ-type equations without noise. These are equations that have a similar structure to the KPZ equation but don't include that random noise term.
So they're more deterministic.
Exactly. And one example is the Kuramoto-Sivashinsky equation, which includes a fourth-order derivative term instead of just the second-order one in KPZ. This equation pops up in a lot of different areas of physics and can describe things like the evolution of flame fronts or the dynamics of certain types of patterns.
Okay, so even without that random noise, these equations can describe some pretty wild phenomena. Now, shifting gears a bit, the paper also talks about these things called driven lattice gases. What are those all about?
So these models are like the lattice models we discussed earlier, like Eden models or SOS models, but now there's an external force pushing the particles on the lattice in a certain direction.
So it's like adding wind or a current to the system.
Exactly. And this external force, it breaks the equilibrium symmetry of the system, and it can lead to all sorts of interesting and unexpected behaviors.
Like what?
Well, for one, you can get interfaces, those boundaries between different phases or regions, and those interfaces might actually move against the driving force in some regions due to the local interactions between the particles.
So they can kind of swim upstream in a sense.
Right. It's counterintuitive, but it can happen because of the interplay between the driving force and the local interactions. And these systems often settle into these complex steady states, and they exhibit scaling behavior in their fluctuations that can be different from what you'd see in equilibrium systems.
Okay, so adding an external force makes things even more interesting. What about the connection between growth and percolation? I know percolation has to do with like how things connect randomly. What's the link to surface growth?
There are actually several connections. The paper specifically mentions this thing called first passage percolation, which deals with how long it takes for something to travel through a random medium along a connected path.
So, like, how long it takes water to seep through a porous material.
Exactly. And this has some analogies to how a growing interface might move through a disordered environment. There's also a connection to the shape of the graying surfaces. The paper points out that the formation of those flat facets during growth, remember those from earlier, they can sometimes be understood in terms of percolation theory.
Really? How so?
It has to do with the connectivity of the growth sites. If you think about those sites on the surface that have a particular orientation, the way they connect to each other can determine whether or not a facet will form.
So the underlying randomness of the connections can influence the macroscopic shape of the object. That's a pretty cool insight. Finally, let's talk about approximation of mean field type. What are those and when do we use them?
Well, as you can imagine, studying surface growth can get pretty complicated, especially when you're dealing with a lot of interacting particles. So mean field approximations are ways to simplify the problem by focusing on the average behavior of the system.
So instead of tracking every single particle, we look at the average behavior of the whole crowd.
Exactly. Instead of trying to keep track of every single particle and its interactions, you basically replace the effect of all the other particles on a given particle with some kind of average or mean field.
So it's like assuming every particle is experiencing the same average environment created by all the others.
Right. And this simplification often makes the math a lot easier to handle. And it can provide some pretty good insights into macroscopic properties like the average growth rate or the overall shape of the growing object. It could even give you clues about when those phase transitions like faceting might occur.
But there's a trade-off, right?
There is. Because you're ignoring those detailed fluctuations and correlations between the particles, mean field approximations might not accurately capture the scaling behavior of the roughness we talked about earlier.
So you get a good general picture, but might miss some of the finer details of the bumpy texture.
That's a good way to put it.
Okay, I think we've covered an incredible amount of ground here. This paper by Krug and Spohn really is a tour de force. It takes us all the way from the macroscopic shapes of growing objects down to the microscopic fluctuations and the mathematical frameworks that describe them.
Absolutely. And I think one of the most important takeaways is the sheer diversity of growth processes out there. And yet, despite that diversity, there are these underlying principles and scaling laws, like the KPZ equation, that can describe a surprisingly wide range of phenomena.
Yeah, that universality is pretty remarkable. And it makes you wonder what other seemingly unrelated processes in nature might share similar underlying mechanisms of pattern formation.
Right. Like we saw how ideas from magnetism can be used to study surface growth. So what other hidden connections are out there waiting to be discovered? That's something to ponder. And with that thought, we'll wrap up this deep dive. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for listening to The Deep Dive.